The cable TV network Showtime has specialized in the last few years in half-hour series about complicated women with major issues, starring some of TV's most gifted actresses. There is Edie Falco from The Sopranos as the star of Nurse Jackie, Toni Collette playing multiple roles in The United States of Tara, Mary Louise Parker playing a mother, widow, and drug dealer in Weeds, and, beginning tonight, Laura Linney as a wife, mother, and high school teacher who learns she has cancer in The Big C. Our TV critic David Bianculli previews that series as well as tonight's season premiere of Weeds.
Television already has one series about a character whose actions and reactions to life change completely after an unexpected diagnosis of terminal cancer. That would be AMC's Breaking Bad, starring Bryan Cranston as a meek high school science teacher who reacts to his own medical death sentence by making and selling crystal meth to provide for his wife and family after he's gone. It's a brilliant show, but it's hard to imagine a TV series with a less attractive thumbnail description. In The Big C, premiering Monday night on Showtime, Laura Linney plays Kathy Jameson, who's also a high school teacher who gets cancer. She has a teen son who's a spoiled brat, and a husband, played by Oliver Platt, who's another spoiled brat, and whom she throws out of the house as one of her first reactions to her cancer diagnosis. Heavy into denial, she doesn't tell either of them about what's happening to her. And it's not until episode 3, in fact, that she makes the first steps towards acceptance by barging in on a cancer support group. But the upfront honesty she encounters there isn't easy for her to accept, nor is the sunny outlook, which she finds positively repellent.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
No, please. I'm Sheila.
Kathy.
Welcome, Kathy. We're glad you're joining us. Why don't you tell us a little about you?
Oh, well, I'm Kathy Jameson. I'm 42. I have a husband and a child, neither of whom are speaking to me. So there you go.
Kathy, do you have cancer?
Wow, really buried the lead there. Yes. Yes, I do. Melanoma, stage 4.
Well, since you came alone, why don't you partner with Leon there? Just pull up a chair.
Leukemia, stage 2.
Well, good for you for coming, Kathy. As we say, cancer is a gift. It allows you to speak up in your life and say, hey, life, this is what I want. But before you speak up, you have to find your voice. Right, Mitchell?
Right.
Laura Linney is just right in this role. She's the reason to watch, and she never disappoints. And Oliver Platt, as her husband, is really good, too. They're the core of a good show and what's best about The Big C. Unfortunately, series creator Darlene Hunt, whose biggest writing credits include the new 90210, and executive producer Jenny Bix of Sex and the City and Men in Trees, and a cancer survivor herself, have overloaded this show with characters that just don't ring true. In fact, they don't ring at all. They just sort of clunk. The people around Kathy, outside of her husband and son, are little more than cartoons. There's her younger brother, who's homeless, her across-the-street neighbor, who's crotchety and solitary, and a sassy high school student, played by Gabourey Sidibe. While Laura Linney elevates The Big C, these other poorly conceived characters drag it down. Now compare that to Weeds, where Mary Louise Parker, as suburban pot dealer Nancy Botwin, has been raising comic hell for years now. Once again, as this season begins, she's forced to load up her family and flee. This time because her youngest son, Shane, just killed a woman who was threatening his mother. So, once again, Weeds is about to reinvent itself. With Nancy, as she shoves her teen boys into the family car, embodying the polar opposite of a role model.
I am sorry, but now you have the handbook for what not to do. And as we drive far away from here, you can talk about the many ways in which I failed you, or we can play license plate bingo. I'll let you decide.
Move over.
Climb over me. I'm not sitting on the hump. Move over.
I'm already buckled.
Well, unbuckle and move to the middle.
You really don't want to mess with me, you know.
Move over now!
Ow! What is it with you and the violence?
Don't play the whole I'm a killer now card. That is unacceptable.
Fine.
In the case of Weeds, everyone surrounding Nancy is a believable, entertaining, complicated character, played by a talented actor. Justin Kirk, as her brother-in-law, is amazingly funny, as always. The Big C, on the other hand, has a strong supporting cast, but the writing is weak. Watch the two shows back-to-back, as Showtime is presenting them, and the comparisons are unavoidable. And, to The Big C, unfavorable. For its first few episodes, The Big C isn't just the title, it's the show's grade.
David Bianculli is TV critic for TVWorthWatching.com and teaches television and film at Rowan University in New Jersey. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with a recording from jazz singer Abby Lincoln's final album, Abby Sings Abby. She died Saturday at the age of 80. We'll feature an interview with her from our archive tomorrow. This is probably her best-known original song, Throw It Away.
I think about the life I live, a figure made of clay, and think about the things I lost, the things I gave away. And when I'm in a certain mood, I search the halls and look. One night I found these magic words in a magic book. Throw it away, throw it away. Give your life, give your love each and every day, and keep your hand wide open. Let the sun shine through, 'cause you can never lose a thing if it belongs to you. There's a hand that rocks the cradle, and a hand to help us stand with the gentle kind of motion as it moves across the land. And the hands unclenched and open, gifts of life and love it brings. So keep your hand wide open if you need anything. Throw it away, throw it away. Give your love, live your life each and every day, and keep your hand wide open. Let the sun shine through, 'cause you can never lose a thing if it belongs to you.
Many people bought the book and are now watching the movie of the journey of writer Elizabeth Gilbert. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love about her eastward journey to Italy, India, and Bali, seeking to find herself after a difficult divorce. Film commentator Mia Mask says the movie follows a well-traveled path, one that maybe shouldn't be traveled so much.
In Eat, Pray, Love, Bali is Liz Gilbert's enchanted land where she finds emotional healing. The local people are simple, primitive, and mysterious.
You will come back to Bali.
She even befriends a Balinese medicine man she seeks out for wisdom and fortune telling.
You will live a long time, have many friends, many experiences. Also, you will lose all your money. Don't worry, you will get it all back again.
The journey was life-changing for Gilbert, but the film is filled with stereotypes about the East. It's timeless, otherworldly, incomprehensible, and waiting to be discovered by Westerners in search of self. This year, movies about women awakening to their true passions while traveling to the Middle East also include Cairo Time and Sex in the City 2. This trope is not limited to movies about 40-something women travelers. There are epic dramas, explosive thrillers, and lighthearted comedies that don't teach you anything new about Asia or the Middle East. Geopolitical thrillers like Syriana work another part of the stereotype. The Middle East is a land populated by duplicitous people and irrational behavior. In the midst of this chaos, Syriana tries to make Big Oil the villain.
A merger between two U.S. oil companies is taking place in Houston. The new company,
but the Connex film ends up telling you exactly who and where the real problem is.
I'm trying to get undigested information.
Well, to the best of our ability.
India is now our ally. Russia is now our ally. Even China will be an ally. Everybody between Morocco and Pakistan is the problem.
Everybody between Morocco and Pakistan is the problem? Syriana places the irrational Gulf region at the center of global conflict, like the films Babel, The Kingdom, and Traitor. Then there are the epic swashbucklers like Alexander, Kingdom of Heaven, 300, and Prince of Persia. They transport you to arid landscapes for action-packed sword and sandal crusading. But Alexander ultimately confirms the idea that the West is the birthplace of civilization and the East is barbaric land.
Master!
Yeah, well, out with it, out with it.
Why are the Persians so cruel?
Oh, come on.
That is not the subject for today, Nearchus, but it is true. The Oriental races are known for their barbarity and their slavish devotion to their senses.
Orientalism is the term academics have given this age-old pattern of depicting Middle and Far Easterners as primitive others.
Oh, I come from a land, from a faraway place.
Nearly 20 years ago, Disney got in trouble for its original Aladdin lyrics.
It's immense and the heat is intense. It's barbaric, but hey, it's home.
Groups like the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee protested these lyrics. Well, nobody's protesting Eat, Pray, Love or saying that you should. After all, it's kinder, gentler, and subtler than Aladdin. But it operates with the same Orientalist repertoire. It may not warrant protest, but its proximity to Orientalist tropes should make you think twice.
Mia Mask is the author of Divas on Screen, Black Women in American Film. She teaches at Vassar College.
Good morning, I'm Linda Wertheimer. Did you take a staycation this summer and chillax? Roughly translated, did you spend your vacation at home relaxing? Those terms have made it into the language, or at least into the latest Oxford Dictionary of English, published yesterday. Staycation and chillax are keepers, along with 2,000 other words, including bromance, a close relationship between male buddies. It's Morning Edition.
As I mentioned at the top of the show, it's been almost 5 years since Hurricane Katrina devastated the Gulf Coast. We're going back to New Orleans now, where I caught up with actor Wendell Pierce on a rainy day earlier this month. You might recognize Pierce's name from the HBO series The Wire. But these days, he's got meaty new roles right here in the city where he grew up. First as a community activist, and second on the current HBO show called Tremé, based in the New Orleans neighborhood of the same name. There, Pierce plays the struggling trombone player Antoine Baptiste.
Now listen, you may have noticed I'm playing my old trombone. So I gave the one you bought me to my teacher, Danny Nelson.
I was very sorry to hear of Mr. Nelson's passing.
So anyway, passed on to his grandson. So you see, that's how we do it in New Orleans, how tradition lives on.
Across town from the Tremé is Pontchartrain Park, which is a historically black neighborhood in the city. And prior to the storm, it was about 90% black and mostly homeowners. But right now, it's suffering one of the slower rates of return, even 5 years after the storm. I'm standing right next to two new homes that have been built. And then right across the street are homes that are still boarded up, still bits and pieces of broken wood leaning against the front doors, broken lights and boarded up windows. And then every couple of streets, you might see a brand new development. I'm on the corner of Press Drive and Prentice Street, right next door to a model home for Wendell Pierce's Community Development Corporation. It's called the Pontchartrain Park CDC, and he's the president.
Hey, Bill. Hey,
Wendell Pierce exchanges warm greetings with realtors and prospective home buyers. He commands the room in a smart pinstripe suit and sunglasses, despite the clouds outside. It's a stark contrast to the down-on-his-heels character he plays on Tremé. Pierce and I sneak away from the tour, and he tells me why this neighborhood's history needs to be preserved.
In New Orleans, in the height of segregation, African Americans could not go to the parks, except on one day, Wednesdays, and it was a great outcry. It was a part of the civil rights advocacy and demonstration to break down those Jim Crow laws, and the city government at the time thought, let's find a way to appease this political movement. And so they had a set aside of 200 acres here. It was for blacks, separate but equal. It was actually appeasing the segregationists by making it separate but equal. We were developed by the same company that developed the white neighborhood that was adjacent to it, Gentilly Woods. But this was the only place where blacks could purchase a home in what was post-World War II suburbia.
And by 2005, it still had over 90% home ownership, and black,
yes,
specifically home ownership.
It was 92% home ownership, 97% African American.
So
this is one of the most stable neighborhoods in America. Less than 10% poverty, and the city rate of poverty is at 28-29%.
Wendell Pierce, I want you to give us a sense then why, after Katrina, there would be such difficulty for folks returning to this neighborhood when you had such level of stability compared to other parts of the city.
That was the thing that surprised me. I couldn't understand why we were the second lowest rate of return in the city, second only to the Lower Ninth Ward, which was completely devastated. And then I realized that most of the people, almost 70% of the neighborhood, was elderly. You know,
your parents included,
my
right?
My parents included, you know. And I realized that it was going to take a long time to get back. They didn't have the wherewithal. And so I put out a call to action to all those men and women of my generation who reap the benefits of coming from such a, you know, strong foundation of Pontchartrain Park, that it was on us.
Now, right across the street from here is a home that looks like it's still not getting there yet. looking abandoned. And tell me, what are the difficulties, now that you've been in this position as president of the Pontchartrain Park Community Development Corporation, what is the issue that makes it so difficult for actual development to happen?
Plans haven't been executed that were laid out. That's the one thing I've learned in this whole journey from actor to developer. You have to run the traps, as they say, of the conflict in policy. A perfect example, there was an appropriation for a grant to raise your home to the new basic flood elevation level, but not for new homes. We're in the deepest part of the disaster. People have a demolished home that was sitting in water for 3 months. The only way that they can actually access some assistance to come back is if they raise that destroyed home. If they demolish the home and then build a new home to the new basic flood elevation, no assistance. You know, so it's that sort of thing. These homes, meeting the new basic flood elevation, we come up to the ceiling of the zoning ordinance of we can't be above a certain height. So you have to go and get a waiver. Okay, fine, that's good. That works it all out. But the conflict is we can't get a waiver for the whole neighborhood.
Right, you're talking about up to 300 houses, aren't you?
Yeah, 500 homes. So we're actually going to have to go through the process of getting a waiver for every home individually, going to a city zoning meeting and ask for a waiver, apply for, and then get the vote on each house.
Yikes.
Where we've been trying to get the city to give a blanket waiver for the area since we have all the properties in this area.
So there are lots of little mousetraps, as you described,
yeah, so it's that sort of logistical focus that has to happen. It's the infrastructure of policy that has been difficult.
What have you learned from this experience about your city?
Wow. That's a really good question. It's like loving a parent who has some issues. You know, I love you, Daddy, but I wish you stopped drinking. You know, that sort of thing. I love this city. We have to get away from the political football that is being kicked around. 5 years since the beginning of this storm, we're still in it, because at times we don't set aside the agendas for the greater good. There are those who do not have our best interests at heart. There are those who are happy with the way things are because it didn't affect them in a certain way. Some people saw it as a great way to reshape the city. They have no problem with thousands and thousands of New Orleanians who are from here who don't have an opportunity to come back, that a way hasn't been made for them to come back. In disasters, it brings out the best in people and the worst in people. And I wish that the thing that I've learned about my city is the fact that we're resilient in spite of all of that.
Wendell Pierce, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk with us.
No, thank you.
Wendell Pierce plays Antoine Baptiste in the HBO program Tremé. He's also the president of the Pontchartrain Park Community Development Corporation in New Orleans.